I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, final countdown. House Republicans work through the night to push the president's big, beautiful bill to the finish line. We discuss what's in the bill. Back to work. Encouraging numbers for the labor market as the unemployment rate falls. Mass controversy. A new report surfaces on what led Pope Francis to restrict the traditional Latin Mass. We have a report from Rome. And a return to tradition. The locals around Castel Gandolfo prepare to welcome Pope Leo XIV. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Thomas the Apostle. Our top story tonight, a big win for Republicans in Congress. House Republicans have finally pushed President Trump's multi-trillion dollar tax and spending bill over the finish line. But it wasn't easy, and the bill's fate hung in the balance for hours overnight as GOP leaders finally convinced GOP holdouts to back the bill. House Speaker Mike Johnson announced the final vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 218, the nays are 214. The motion is adopted.
Speaker Johnson was relieved that it was finally over.
Everything was an absolute disaster under the Biden-Harris radical, woke, progressive Democrat regime. And we took the best effort that we could in one big, beautiful bill to fix as much of it as we could. And I am so grateful to God.
Others agree.
Over 14 months of hard work, deliberation, compromise, things that nobody will be happy with the entire bill. But most of us understand that that's compromise, that's democracy at work. We are better off of this.
Not so, say Democrats. Before the vote, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries bashed Republicans over Medicaid cuts, which could affect millions.
As a result of the lack of health care that will result directly from this one big ugly bill, people in America will die. Unnecessary deaths. That is outrageous.
Congresswoman Jen Kiggins is a nurse practitioner.
So I understand Medicaid very much so. I also know this program needs to be strengthened and preserved, and that's what Republicans have tried to do. We've tried to tweak it, put work requirements in there so people who are able-bodied adults can go to work so they don't need to be receiving Medicaid.
Pro-life lawmakers cheered the defunding of Planned Parenthood for a year.
Being a business guy, I also know that 1 year of defunding will disrupt Planned Parenthood. And I also hope that we come back next year with another reconciliation package and make it permanent.
Catholic Congressman Dan Muser agrees.
Well, I don't think Planned Parenthood should receive any federal funds, any taxpayer dollars. I think that they, in many cases, are a rogue organization. They pretend to do good for the communities.
Democrats say Republicans are going to pay at the polls.
It's an abomination, and they will pay for it at the ballot box next year when Democrats take the majority back because people are going to rebel.
Republican leaders are already talking about a second reconciliation bill dealing with entitlement programs.
It's celebration time at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue tonight. For President Donald Trump, the passing of the bill represents a pinnacle achievement and defining political moment. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt tweeted, President Trump looks forward to signing the One Big Beautiful Bill into law to officially usher in the golden age of America. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, good evening.
Good evening to you, Monse. Tonight, Trump administration reaction pouring in. Vice President J.D. Vance posting, promises made, promises kept. And DHS Secretary Kristi Noem says the bill's passage is a win for law and order.
President Donald Trump and Republicans seal the deal, and very soon the bill heads to his desk. Before the big vote, Kevin Hassett, director of the National Economic Council, told me,
President Trump was in the Oval making phone calls to just about everybody in the House. And at the end of the day, he was extremely enthusiastic at the response that he was getting from even the skeptics of the bill.
And today, the U.S. Treasury Department posting this video. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent not impressed with the Democrats, posting, I'm not going to take firefighting advice from economic arsonists like Representative Jeffries and the Democrats. The one big beautiful bill is for Main Street. President Trump says the bill is one of the most consequential bills ever.
And tonight, former President Joe Biden weighing in on the Republican bill, calling it reckless and cruel. Meanwhile, President Trump heads to Des Moines, where he'll visit the Iowa State Fairgrounds to take part in the Celebrate America event. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks, Owen. Well, this big, beautiful bill includes a number of initiatives. They range from Medicare to school choice and Social Security. What exactly are the provisions in this bill? The Associated Press says the bill includes $4.5 trillion in tax breaks and spending cuts, and another $350 billion in national security and for the deportation of people in the country illegally. To offset the lost tax revenue, there are $1.2 trillion in cutbacks to the Medicaid, health care, and food stamps programs. Also in the measure, the defunding of Planned Parenthood for 1 year. It's projected to save around $500 million. The bill allows states to opt into a school choice program, which provides up to $1,700 in tax credit scholarships. The child tax credit is set to increase to $2,500 for 3 years, and SNAP benefits would be handled largely by each state and require able-bodied adults to work 80 hours a month, resulting in $300 billion in cuts. The head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops says the bill has flaws. Archbishop Timothy Broglio says the cuts to Medicaid and clean energy tax credits will impact the most vulnerable. He's also disappointed that the measure adds to the deficit and condemned the final version that removed the ban on federal funding for so-called gender transition surgeries. Joining us now to go over some of this is Patrick T. Brown, fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Patrick, it's great to be with you. Let's start with some of the pro-life provisions in this bill. The legislation stops forced taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood for 1 year. And the head of the USCCB says that he's disappointed that this ban isn't longer. What do you say? What's your reaction to this?
Well, the original text of the legislation had a 10-year ban on federal funding for Planned Parenthood. That was the goal of many pro-life advocates. Unfortunately, due to Senate rules, it had to be shrunk down to 1 year. That's what could get passed. They were had a very tight self-imposed deadline. And I have every reason to believe pro-lifers are going to go back and try to push for a longer extension of that ban going forward.
Well, we've heard a lot about what this bill does to Medicaid. What exactly are the changes being made and how will it impact American families?
Well, the first thing to remember is that roughly 20% of Americans are on Medicaid. So this has a potential to be a mammoth sea change in access to a safety net program that provides health care for a lot of individuals. The biggest change is the introduction of a nationwide work requirement, where now people will have to demonstrate that they've been working 80 hours a month or engage in other forms of community service. What we've seen in the states that have done this is that this actually doesn't necessarily lead more people to work, but it does cut Medicaid rolls by people not able to fill out the paperwork properly or other hurdles that get in the way. And so there was a big debate on the Senate and House floor about what this will do, especially to rural hospitals for whom Medicaid is a key source of funding. It's a political vulnerability, no doubt about it.
Well, it's certainly a part of what many of the groups, the Catholic groups that help with social services rely on. The White House says that Medicaid will be strengthened by this bill by removing some of the fraud in the system and protecting the program for the truly vulnerable. What's your reaction to that statement?
That's true to some degree, but also an exaggeration in others. It's true that the bill tries to prevent illegal immigrants from taking advantage of Medicaid, which they're already banned from doing, but tries to strengthen that. The work requirements sound good in theory, but again, as we've seen in practice, a lot of times families who are eligible struggle to fill out the right forms, rely on employers to submit their paperwork on time, that sort of thing. We've seen this in Arkansas, Georgia, and New Hampshire and other states. So it's really going to take some careful consideration to do this in a way that doesn't lead to massive drops in coverage. And with a very short deadline, December 2026, it's going to be a real burden on states to avoid some of the projections of doom.
Well, we're certainly going to look into that. What about Medicare? Do you see any changes to that program after the president signs this bill?
Republicans are very clear that they did not want to touch old age entitlements in this bill, and maybe they will down the line. It's a political third rail, as we all know. In fact, they did include a $6,000 expansion in the standard deduction, so seniors are more able to deduct from their taxes and benefit in that way. That was a promise that President Trump made on the campaign trail. Unfortunately, House Republicans and Senate Republicans didn't provide similar impetus to expand the child tax credit. They only ended up deciding to bump it up by $200 from its current level of $2,000. That was a missed opportunity, in my opinion, and it sort of takes some of the steam out of the effort to turn the Republican Party into the pro-family party.
Well, certainly something we're going to be tracking, especially after that signature is on the page. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Anytime. Thank you.
For more on what this bill means for school choice, we turn to Tommy Schultz, CEO of the American Federation for Children and an advocate for school choice. Tommy, it's great to have you back. First off, on social media, you said of the Big Beautiful Bill, quote, "This was a decade-long fight to give all families, especially lower-income families, the freedom to choose the best K through 12 education for their sons and daughters." What makes you say that?
Look, happy National School Choice Day. This has been a decade-long fight, maybe even multi-decade-long fight when you really think about it. But in particular, President Trump, Betsy DeVos, Ted Cruz, they've been working on this piece of legislation since about 2015, 2016, 2017. They made a real push. 2020, they almost got it across the finish line. And now it's finally going to be heading to the president's desk in about 24 hours.
Well, let's get into some of that for Catholic schools. We saw an increased enrollment and interest since COVID in Catholic education and what the schools provide for young families. What impact does this bill have for them?
Well, when you look at the landscape of Catholic education, first of all, the nation's report card shows that Catholic schools are about 2 to 2.5 years ahead of their public school peers. So if we care about K through 12 education in America, it'd be great for more and more families to get access to Catholic schools. Secondly, about 40% of all private schools in America are Catholic schools. It's just the history of American education that's really been fundamentally tied to Catholic schooling in America in general. And so when you look at this bill, and what it does is it allows every single individual taxpayer the ability to donate $1,700 per year to a scholarship group to get a full tax credit. So what does that mean? It means that thousands and thousands of Catholic charitable organizations that already exist, that already provide scholarships for kids, particularly lower income kids, they can now raise a lot more money. And what's really incredible about this bill is that there isn't a cap to this. So previous versions of the bill, there was a $10 billion limitation. Ultimately, this is a smaller individual cap of how much they can donate per person. But at the end of the day, unlimited funds could theoretically be raised.
You're talking about a deficit that would be offset by taxpayers investing in education. Now, we're talking about Catholic private schools, but you do have a lot of people who send their children to public schools. What would you say the effect of this bill on public schools will be?
Well, like we've seen with all of the private school choice programs currently in about 32 different states in America, they help public schools because at the end of the day, competition breeds better results. And when you're seeing more and more families access the school of their choice, they're empowered to choose the school of their choice. They're not just restricted by the last five digits of their address, their zip code of where they have to send their kids to school. Suddenly the schools get better, right? They start competing for students or they start understanding, gosh, you know, these underperforming public schools, they no longer have the kind of chokehold that they do on taxpayers and for the families that live in those zip codes. So at the end of the day, it's a rising tide that lifts all boats. We've seen this in Florida and Ohio in particular. Dr. David Figlio has really good research showing that the more that a public school has competition from charter schools or private schools, the better that public school district actually performs at the end of the day. So I anticipate this is going to really help public schools flourish. It's going to help great teachers, actually, because at the end of the day, teachers have the ability to start schools in their own communities going forward in plenty of states already. But especially when this federal bill comes online in 2027, this is going to be a golden age of education and a golden age of teaching in America, I think.
Well, Tommy, we look forward to doing that state-by-state analysis with you once the bill is signed. Thank you so much for being with us. Tommy Schultz, CEO of the American Federation for Children and an advocate for school choice.
Thanks for having me.
Staying in the nation's capital, the Supreme Court says it will review a case about sports and transgender students. The nation's highest court says it will review lower court rulings in favor of biological boys competing in girls' sports in Idaho and West Virginia. More than two dozen states have laws banning biological males from women's teams in certain sports. The case will be argued in the fall. Good news on the economy as the jobs numbers came in higher than expected. The U.S. added 147,000 jobs last month, according to the latest data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The number exceeded the predictions of many economists and is higher than the 144,000 added in May. The national unemployment rate also fell to 4.1%. President Trump and President Putin spoke by phone today, marking the first conversation between the two leaders since the U.S. announced it would halt the delivery of some air defense missiles to Ukraine. The Kremlin says the two leaders discussed Iran, Ukraine, and other issues over the nearly hour-long conversation. Meanwhile, dozens are injured following a Russian drone strike on the Ukrainian city of Odessa. Officials say a multi-story building was damaged and two children have been hospitalized for smoke inhalation. The war in Ukraine was a big topic of conversation when Pope Leo met with the outgoing president of Poland at the Vatican. President Duda's term is set to end next month. The outgoing leader also spent time meeting with Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin. The Gaza Health Ministry says dozens of Palestinians are dead following Israeli airstrikes and shootings. The ministry says nearly half of those killed were attempting to get humanitarian aid. Several were killed while outside sites associated with the U.S.-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. This after Amnesty International issued a report claiming Israel and the organization have militarized the aid distribution system as a starvation tactic against Palestinians. This after President Trump announced Israel agreed to a 60-day ceasefire and urges Hamas to do the same. We have a lot still to come here on EWTN News Nightly. Leaked documents cast into doubt the reasons behind the restrictions on the traditional Latin Mass, what those documents show, and how the Vatican is responding. And an air of excitement. We speak to residents of Castel Gandolfo as they prepare to welcome the Pope back to his traditional summer residence. And grants an exemption from restrictions on the traditional Latin Mass to a parish in Texas. Bishop Michael Sis requested the exemption for a parish in his diocese of San Angelo in West Texas. Bishop Sis said he made the request with a total openness to the will of God. This is believed to be the first exemption made to Tradiciones Custodes made under the pontificate of Pope Leo XIV. A new article purports to shed light on the questionnaire that led to Pope Francis's restriction of the traditional Latin Mass. It was written by longtime Vatican journalist Diane Montagna. She says she has obtained the overall assessment that prompted Tradiciones Custodes, the motu proprio that restricted the TLM. Montagna says the majority of bishops said that restrictions to the TLM would cause more harm than good. Joining us now to talk more about the report is Frank Rocha, EWTN's Vatican editor. Frank, thank you so much for joining us again. First off, what can you tell us about this leaked report and these documents and their validity?
Well, the Vatican journalist, longtime Vatican journalist Diane Montagna, who publishes independently, got what she said were excerpts from a report that was put together in 2020 based on a consultation of the world's bishops about what they thought about the celebration of the Latin Mass. And that report has never been made public. It was a secret, a confidential internal document. But she got these excerpts that she said showed that most of the bishops were fine with continuing the policy under Pope Benedict of allowing basically in general, the celebration of the old Latin Mass. The Pope, when he decided, the Pope Francis, when Pope Francis decided to restrict it, he suggested that the language he used suggested that the majority of bishops had told him not to do that, had told him that they were upset and wanted an end to it. So if that's true, it shows that there was an important discrepancy and the Pope might have even been misleading in stating his reasons. Now, the Vatican hasn't explicitly confirmed the validity of these texts, but basically they have confirmed that they are a partial reading a partial record, and they stress that there are other records which they haven't released.
One of the major questions that Pope Leo has surfaced for him specifically is the question of his view toward the traditional Latin Mass or Mass in Latin in general. Will this article prompt him to act?
Well, I popes don't like to be lobbied, certainly not publicly. So I wouldn't think that it could work. It could cut both ways. He might be annoyed that somebody leaked. I suspect he's probably annoyed that somebody leaked this. And so that, on balance, that's not a plus. If it's true, as it seems to be, that a lot of bishops were in favor of allowing the Mass to go forward, then that it might be something he would take into consideration, because he's shown that he's very collegial, that he wants the Synod of Bishops to be very much a bishop's organ, that he wants to listen to the cardinals. So if most of the bishops out there are in favor of it, I would think that he would listen to them, yes.
And this morning he had a gathering with Ukrainian young children, and he was recalling his own experience with the Latin Mass. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I was curious, and it may be no coincidence that he mentioned that when he was growing up, for part of the time, that the Mass was in Latin, and then later the Mass was in the modern languages, the local languages. And he basically said that in either way, it's still worship, it's worshiping God and together. So maybe he was sending a message to adults, too, to not fight about this, that there's room for both points of view. That might be an overreading, but it's certainly one that makes sense.
Thank you so much, Frank. We'll be following up on this story. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a return to tradition. As Pope Leo prepares to move to the papal summer residence, we speak to the citizens ready to greet him. Plus, the Holy Father just released his prayer intention for July, and the simple petition could be life-changing. Gandolfo is preparing to welcome Pope Leo on July 6th. The last time that the small town hosted a pope for a period of time was during the pontificate of Benedict XVI, who also chose it as a temporary residence after his resignation in 2013. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Volinska-Ridi has more.
You can experience the atmosphere of excitement, a very special enthusiasm. The whole town is happy to see so many people coming back from all parts of the world.
The residents of the beautiful lakeside of Castel Gandolfo are overjoyed to welcome a very special guest, Pope Leo XIV. After a 12-year hiatus, the Holy Father resumes the old tradition this Sunday, July the 6th, for a 2-week stay. During his papacy, Pope Francis chose to remain in Rome during his summers.
For us, it is something really beautiful, because the people of Castel Gandolfo, in spite of their innate shyness, are very friendly to welcoming all citizens of the world, as we have always been used to during the Pope's stay.
The Vatican employees have been working hard for several weeks now in the large area of Castel Gandolfo, covering 136 acres, which has belonged to the Vatican City-State as its extraterritorial part since the Lateran Treaty of 1929.
The preparations for the Pope's stay here in Castel Gandolfo are in full swing now. Under renovation are the barracks of the Pontifical Swiss Guard inside the Apostolic Palace, and in the Vatican Gardens next to us, just 100 meters from here, the swimming pool and a small tennis court for Pope Leo are already waiting for this very special guest.
During his holiday, the Pope will stay in the garden area, as the Apostolic Palace was turned into a publicly accessible museum by Pope Francis in 2016. So, from the 6th to the 20th of July, Pope Leo will occupy the spectacular Villa Barberini, built in 1628, immersed in the greenery of extensive gardens.
Villa Barberini. I think there's not much that needs to be done, really, since it has always been well maintained. They had to update some facilities that hadn't been used in recent years. Maybe it just needs a bit of painting, but Villa Barberini is beautiful just as it is.
The close relationship between the popes and Castel Gandolfo dates back 400 years, when Pope Urban VIII Barberini chose this idyllic place on gentle vine-covered hills for his summer residence. Since then, many popes have spent their summertime here, marking with their presence important moments in the history of the Church and the world, like in the remarkable period of World War II when Pope Pius XII converted the palace into a shelter for thousands of Jews. Now Leo XIV will return here in the footsteps of his predecessors to write new pages of history. He will meet crowds of faithful on Sunday, July the 13th, for Angelus prayer in the main square of the town after celebrating Mass at the nearby church of St. Thomas of Villanova at 10 a.m. A week later, on Sunday, July the 20th, Pope Leo will celebrate Mass in Albano Cathedral, previously his titular church as cardinal, and after that, at noon, he will recite the Angelus in Castel Gandolfo again. In the afternoon, he will make his return to the Vatican. The Holy Father will return to Castel Gandolfo once more, 4 weeks later, on Friday, August the 15th, on the Solemnity of the Assumption. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskariedi, EWTN News Nightly.
Before we say goodbye, we'd like to share with you Pope Leo's prayer intention for the month of July. He just released it today.
Let us pray that we might again learn how to discern, to know how to choose paths of life and reject everything that leads us away from Christ and the gospel.
Pope Leo encourages us also to pray to the Holy Spirit so that we may learn to pause and see the real motives behind our actions and ultimately move closer to Christ. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. Tomorrow, we have a July 4th special from Capitol Hill, How Lawmakers Balance Faith and Politics. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.